Well, one thing that's important for our Australian listeners to understand is the U.S. federal system is actually quite different in the United States than in Australia. Australia has a much stronger federal government. And so even despite what we saw during the COVID era with Western Australia having its borders closed, relatively still, U.S. states have a lot more autonomy. And what Roe versus Wade did back in the 1970s was establish a national level right to an abortion, or to use the parlance of the women's movement at the time, a right to choice. Whereas previously you had some states that had legally allowed abortions and other states that legally prohibited them, that criminalized an abortion. And so really for the last 50 years in the United States, there has been a national right to choice, a national right to an abortion. And that decision was in the mind of religious conservatives, a horrible misjustice some 50 years ago. And so for the last 50 years, abortion has been a major rallying cry for Republicans or for people on the right side of the political spectrum in the United States. And it's almost become a litmus test for Republican political leaders that they had to pledge to be committed to overturning Roe versus Wade. The truth be told, public opinion in the United States has been pretty strongly in favor of Roe versus Wade for decades now. 60-65% of the American public strongly support a woman's right to control her body, to the right to an abortion in that process. And there have been variations, taking place. And the kind of blanket rights given by Roe have been slowly chipped away by individual states, imposing certain limits in terms of timing. There's been, bills passed called heartbeats bills in terms of first trimester, second trimester, trimester, whatsoever. But the truth be told, I think few people actually thought that it would ever be overturned. It's worth noting that every one of the five conservative justices that now make up the majority in the Supreme Court were interviewed in great depth about this issue when they had the Senate confirmation hearings, and every one of them pledged to respect existing precedents, right?
Yeah.
Essentially pledged not to overturn Roe versus Wade, saying, look, this is established law. It's been there for 50 years. It has been defended, and it has actually been upheld by previous Supreme Courts. We're not going to overturn it.
Yeah.
And so the leak of this document just several weeks ago was a real shock through the American political system, because it made it quite clear that now with a full majority on the Supreme Court, those conservative justices are planning to overturn Roe versus Wade. We don't know that for a fact yet. We just have a leak of an opinion, and those things tend to undergo some change in the process. But it really has clarified the battle lines in American society today.
Yeah, yeah. We must clarify that Roe v. Wade has not been overturned yet, and that if that decision comes, it will likely come around June. It was just a leaked opinion from Justice Alito. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So the battlegrounds have been drawn, and the battle for abortion is sort of on again. If Roe v. Wade is overturned and that sort of safeguard on a national level is dropped, states themselves can step in and quite easily enact their own laws to allow abortion depending on that state. I know California has already made that move, but it also means that southern states, Texas and Tennessee and those places may look to make abortion and other elements of contraception even harder for women and people to get to. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. In fact, as it stands today, I think there are some 16 states that have already, passed laws guaranteeing a right to an abortion in their states. There are another 13 who have already passed what they call trigger laws, laws that the moment Roe versus Wade has passed are automatically in effect, right? They are state laws that have passed, which are now null and void because of the Supreme Court's decision on a national level. That they would be, and there's another 13 that are moving in that direction quite rapidly. So that most estimates are that within, you know, hours after Roe versus Wade is repealed, if that indeed is the case, there will be at least some 26 U.S. states in which abortion will be criminalized. It'll be illegal. And in many respects, this is seen as kind of the proverbial dog chasing the car. Mm. I don't think there's been a lot of thought given to what actually happens if it takes place, because, you know, do you criminalize? Do you put women in jail for having an abortion, right?
Yeah.
And at what point, you know, it becomes a very complicated thing, where in the abstract, it was a very important, you know, political messaging tool. In implementation, it's much more complicated.
Yeah, a case of ideology being more relevant or more important than practicality.
Precisely.
Yeah. If we look to America as well, America seems to always be in election mode. We're currently in election mode in Australia. We're somewhat lucky in that an election is called and we get 6 weeks of nonsense and then we get back to the idea of governing. In America, it seems that elections are happening all the time. We're in the run-up to the midterms and primaries are happening at the moment. How are the primaries shaping up? It seems as though it's a battle for, particularly on the Republican side, pro-Trump, not so pro-Trump, in between kind of wannabe Trump but not quite Trump primary candidates. Where are we shaping? Is Trump's hold on the Republican Party still as strong?
Yeah, it certainly is. There have been several very important recent test cases. Perhaps the most important has been in the state of Ohio, where a very Trumpian candidate, former never Trumper, but a very Trumpian candidate in J.D. Vance, is a well-known author of a book called Hillbilly Elegy, has, you know, campaigned to get Trump's endorsement. In securing Trump's endorsement, clearly made the difference for him, and he won.
Although Trump did call him J.P. Vance just beforehand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, J.P. Mendel, J.P., things were confused, the former president, but... But no, there's no question that his endorsement made the difference in that race. And so at least for the Republican Party, right, Trump's, you know, endorsement continues to matter. There is still no clear pathway to prominence or power within the Republican Party fighting against Donald Trump. So that's the real challenge, right? Yeah. That's where they're at right now. Now, the issue, and again, for Australian listeners to understand, is that, yes, it's true that the U.S. does seem to be in perpetual campaign mode, but there's a bit of a staggering that takes place. You know, the House has elections every 2 years, as do a third of the Senate. But the U.S. presidential election takes place only every 4 years. Mm. And so the midterm elections are really an important bellwether halfway through a president's term. So President Biden, will be almost halfway through his term this coming November. He's not on the ballot, and so we don't normally have the pull of a presidential race to get people to come out. The U.S. doesn't have mandatory voting, so turnout is always much lower in midterms, which means that the people who actually do come out, take off work on a Tuesday, tend to be the real crazies on both sides of politics, right? The really ideologically committed. There's a real concern now in the U.S. that Republicans will take over the House of Representatives and maybe even the Senate in the midterm elections, in which case they would be able to entirely stymie any Biden administration priorities for the last 2 years of his term, which is not exactly a good look going into re-election. And so there is this sense, and I just came back the week before last from the United States, from Washington, was there in September again, that now we're in a situation where there's been a bit of snapback, right? This life is kind of a bit normal compared to what it was during the Trump years. But there is this fear that the barbarians are at the gate.
Yeah.
The enemy's at the gate. And if the Democrats don't turn out for the midterm elections, that Republicans could win and they could win again and we could have a return of President Trump in 2024.
Yeah.
And really all about.
A lot of Republicans have already indicated that they will essentially cease the January 6th investigation as it stands, and some even on the super far right, which isn't that far right in the Republican circles at the moment, would look to impeach President Biden for quote-unquote stealing the 2020 election, which is still a misnomer hanging around.
Yeah.
When we look at America, the polls indicate that Biden and the Democrats are really, really struggling. They just can't get that cut through. But if we look at what's happening in America, the economy is bouncing back. Jobs are at a record low percentage. The deficit has been drawn down. They're doing some good stuff in Ukraine in terms of helping out. Why is it that the polls don't reflect that? Is it it's simply because, like you say, the midterms election, the engagement is just not the same as it is for a presidential election?
Yes, there's several reasons. One, the United States remains a deeply divided country. And for fully half of the population, their sources of information are not what we would consider to be in an open democratic society, fair, nonpartisan, unbiased sources of information. And so if you're in Republican or more conservative circles, or you are a supporter of President Trump, which again, almost 50% of the population was, they're still continuing to get their news from Sinclair syndicates on the local news station, which is all very, very conservative, almost lockstep nationally. It's not localized in any common sense of the word, from the Murdoch media. And then social media has a tremendous impact on this, where everybody's in a bit of an information bubble. And then the other side, the progressives just aren't as energized, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's where the real interesting thing is the question, and we don't know the answer to this yet, is whether or not the emergence of this risk that Roe versus Wade will be overturned will be sufficient to energize women voters, be sufficient to energize younger voters in such that they will actually be motivated to organize and come out to the polls in the midterm elections. And there's a lot of speculation as to who leaked the draft opinion and why. Some suggesting it was actually leaked by conservative Republicans to get it out of the way before the midterms, right? There's others that suggest, obviously, it was done by some progressives in an attempt to get out there. But one way or the other, the U.S. Supreme Court is more politicized than it's been for generations.
Yeah. There's also that the backside of that is Ginni Thomas, who is Clarence Thomas's wife, exchanged text messages with Mark Meadows, who was the then chief of staff of the president, about the January 6th insurrection, which is further politicizing the Supreme Court in a way that I'm sure Clarence Thomas probably didn't want it to be.
No, and there was an awful large outcry about the Justice Clarence Thomas's refusal to recuse himself from issues related to the investigation of the January 6th insurrection, precisely because of his own wife's involvement.
Yeah.
So there's no question that the credibility of the Supreme Court as an institution has really taken some serious hits. And there remain traditionalists on there. I mean, the Chief Justice John Roberts, appointed by Bush, right, is considered to be a traditionalist that cares about the institution. But then you've got these three most recent justices who were appointed in very controversial circumstances, particularly the ones where in the waning months of the last year of the Obama administration, President Obama was denied his pick, as opposed to Amy Cohen Barrett, who was put in just days before the last elections. And so, there are some fundamental questions of legitimacy in the public eyes about this current court.
Real quick, last one. You said you just got back from the States after a couple of visits. What's the feeling on the ground in America on the unfolding disaster and unfolding tragedy of Ukraine and what's happening there? The support seems to be what Biden is doing and sending in aid and weapons is enough. Is there this underlining current of, do we have to put boots on the ground, or is there a worry about what happens next with Russia? How's the American people feeling on that?
Again, remarkable public support for the Ukrainian people, for the Ukrainian president, and for U.S. support for them. In fact, if anything, urging the Biden administration to do more. I think probably, at least my take of it, talking to the policy class, is there's a pretty clear consensus that the United States and NATO will not be involved in direct conflict with Russia. However, were Russia to attack any of the NATO countries, or were Russia to use non-conventional weapons, either chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons, that would completely change the dynamic. As it is, there's been tremendous success in the provision of intelligence and technology and in training to Ukraine itself. that obviously has been quite remarkably successful at stymieing Russian ambitions in Ukraine at tremendous cost to the Russian people and the Russian military.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, isn't it? And one last one. Do Americans care at all about our election over here in Australia?
The American public, no. And I have to confess, just from my own lived experience, I spent 25 years in Washington, D.C. as an Asia specialist.
Yeah.
And not quite fully understanding a parliamentary democracy. And I can recall the first time when there was a leadership spill and Julie Gillard took over from Kevin Rudd. I remember seeing the news and walking down the street and said, huh, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, it switched back again. And I remember saying, huh, that's weird.
Yeah.
And that was about the extent of thought that I gave it, despite the fact that I was someone involved in foreign policy and international relations.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, the Biden administration obviously is very much focused on it.
For sure.
But I don't think that they would have any real cause for concern. We in Australia, some people like to bemoan the fact that we're having a small target election. But from an international partner's perspective, that's probably a very comforting
thing.
Because when it comes to alliances, when it comes to regional policy, when it comes to the Quad and AUKUS and these things, there really is not a cause for concern one side or the other. Ideologically, on issues like climate change, et cetera, you might think that there would be a little bit more simpatico thinking between the Biden administration and a Labor government here in Australia. But the truth is, on the core issues that matter, there really is remarkable support across the political spectrum in Australia, as well as in the United States, for that relationship.